Blog Talk Radio.
Let's see it, Brent, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm super fantastic. Happy Thursday to you, my friend.
I appreciate that, Phil. We're getting close to the weekend here and looking forward to that. Hope you are as well.
And we got another two-show week. We're working up towards our vaunted, longed-for three-show week. It could be next week. No promises, but I'm just saying, you know, it's...
we're ramping up
possible futures here, and that is definitely a possible future for us. So,
awesome.
Looking forward to that. All right, well, we've got a lot to talk about. Our show tonight is called Brain Zapped and Other Topics. So I don't know if we start with the brain zapping or if we start with some other topics, Stephen. It's kind of a grab bag.
Let's go straight into brain zapping. I mean, give the people what they want, man.
And what people apparently want increasingly is a little jolt of something into their heads. Interesting story in the Washington Post. Brain zapping gadgets promise to make you a better you, smarter, stronger, even happier. And, of course, this is a subject to which we are no strangers, right? We've talked about this numerous times in the past. When you talk about the smarter and stronger side of it, this very interesting transcranial stimulation, kind of self-brain hacking that people have been doing for the last few years has been a very interesting thing to see unfold. And we talked about it last year, a couple of years ago. People buying do-it-yourself kits, buying electrodes, batteries, rubber bands, and basically zapping their own heads in order to try to make themselves a little smarter.
I've just got this picture in my head of Napoleon Dynamite. You know, I mean,
it's hard not to picture that.
Yeah. I mean, I just got to put this out. It's the PSA portion of our program now, Phil, is, you know, folks, don't try this at home. FDA has not approved any of this stuff. But
I'm just going to say that anybody who sticks wires on a battery and then sticks the other end of those wires into their head probably does need a little intelligence boost. That's all. I mean, I hope they get it from the battery, but, maybe I'm just stodgy. I don't know. Maybe I'm just overly cautious. But
it's hilarious. So the irony here is that the device works. It gives them the intelligence, and they realize, hey, this is
crazy.
Stupid.
I wired my head. Yeah, I got to stop doing this. Yeah. The effect wears off. They get dumb again. They're like, hey, I need to be smart. And it's an endless cycle.
That's right.
of using these things. But now we've reached a new stage. That's what this story is about. And we've talked a little bit about this, I think. I don't know. I've written about it on Facebook anyway, meaning to talk about it. What's changed here in the last few months, really, I don't recall seeing too much on this before the beginning of this year. People are making gadgets now, mass market gadgets that produce some of these effects. And there are various gadgets to produce various effects. So if you're interested in just, being a little more productive, there's one kind of, device that you can put on your head for that. And in fact, that one will also allow you to calm yourself down. So it's got two settings. It can either kind of rev you up. It's great. You know, it's kind of it's both a stimulant and a depressant. And I think of it in terms of, I don't know if you've ever listened to those binaural tones. You put on your headphones. That's the way those work, right? Some of those supposedly will, make your brain more receptive to information, make you more alert, and then some of them will make you more relaxed and I don't notice that they, for me particularly, have any really strong effect. Maybe a little bit in either direction, but I'm guessing that that's what these devices do too. That probably you stick one of these things on your head and you feel a little something. I think if they were really unleashing a lot of juice into your head, they would probably have a hard time becoming legal or staying legal as devices. So they're probably not doing much. But it's pretty interesting to read the article. People, you know, some people are reporting that they're having, you know, real results. I guess about 2/3 of the people using them say they, you know, noticed a real improvement, you know, thanks to the fact that they're they're putting this little head zapper on their head. That leaves a whole third who apparently aren't feeling anything. And I noticed one of the comments on this Washington Post story, I think it was on the Washington Post story, maybe somebody on Facebook, said, yeah, and that makes you wonder, well, how many of the 2/3 are having a placebo effect?
Right.
Good question, right? But on the other hand, if it's an effective placebo effect, if people become more productive via a placebo effect, I see no problem with that. You know, I don't see that this is hurting people in any way. And it's definitely a better idea than, again, wiring up your own batteries and sticking them on your head.
Well, yeah. So, and this article has multiple pictures of people. Some of them have like these really slick-looking devices. But this one guy, towards about halfway down the article, the way he's wired up looks pretty primitive. The Suman
Think
Pal.
Module. Is that the one?
Yeah,
the
Suman
Think
Pal.
Module. Yeah.
Yeah. That one, he's got multiple wires coming out of this thing on the side of his head. It looks like most of these are like, it's got like a pad that's on the right forehead. Is there something about that part of your brain that needs to be stimulated to be more productive, I wonder?
Probably. Definitely our wiring is different on the right and left sides of our heads. People who get migraines know that those happen on the right side primarily. And we know that, you know, there's this whole talk about your right brain to your left brain. So apparently, whatever it is they're trying to access with this current, they have an easier path to on the right side than the left. So I assume that's what's going on there. I don't think it maps to that traditional kind of stereotypical and ridiculous right brain, left brain thing people talk about. But I think that, you know, it has something to do with, probably does have something to do with brain physiology.
Right.
Or it could just be a coincidence. Maybe the photographer just thought it looked better on the right side of people's heads.
Yeah, maybe so.
Why don't you get one and check it out, Stephen?
I think I will.
I don't know why you haven't ordered one yet. That's my question.
Lord knows you need it, Stephen.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, Bill.
I want you to test it out, and if it works, then I want to get one, right? I don't want to be first.
Definitely. This is precisely the sort of device that I want to. I want to not be first in testing. You know, there's definitely
a
bleeding edge problem with things like this.
Yeah, I'm closer now to doing this than I would have been to, you know, just the bare wires. I'll tell you that much. I guess if a close friend recommended it, I might try it. That's where I'm with this, because I like the idea. Let me say this. I think the idea of actually getting in and making our brains work differently to our benefit, ultimately we will do. You know, technology is going to allow us to do that. And when they talk about some of these broader kinds of changes that they're looking to bring about, you know, actually improving people's mood, you know, making people happy. I mean, we've talked about that too, about wireheading, and you know, this whole idea of raising your
happiness
threshold, whatever the tone is. I think we'll do all that. I think all of that will happen. Probably sooner than we think. It's like we talked earlier this week about those technologies that hadn't quite arrived, or they were delivering on some of their promise but weren't there yet. So I look at this and I go, okay, I'm not saying it's fake and bogus. I'm saying I'm waiting for 2.0 or 3.0. I guess, you know, that's
yeah. Yeah, and By laughing at it, I may be guilty a little bit of the same kind of prejudice of, you know, this will never work that we kind of talked about in our last show. But it's, you know, I'm kind of with you, Phil. I think there may very well be something to this. And I certainly believe that there's room for improvement of the human condition in general. And so if this is one path to it, then more power to them. But I'm kind of with you. I'd want to do a little more empirical data on this before I jump in.
I think so. Per the show we did earlier this week, I think, you know, we're heading in the right direction with this. The skepticism actually helped, right?
Yeah.
Because normal, sensible people won't just take raw electrical wires and stick them on their heads.
Right.
Some will, and they're the trailblazers, and they get the whole thing going. And then you've got, if you look at this article here in the Washington Post, you got, you know, the nice little headband or the nice little head patch that people are putting on their heads with wires going into them. And you go, okay, well, there's a whole new threshold of normal for people who will do this. It's still not me, okay? But, you know, we're getting closer, right? That's the thing. And I think the resistance to in some ways, I think the resistance to these technologies actually helped drive them along. I really think so. It's that skeptical pushback that motivates the people who are making them happen to make it that much more valid, especially when it's something like this, which, again, I think, and you agree, in the long run, we will have technologies that do these things.
Imagine a technology, Phil, that it looks much like one of these headbands, but in addition to doing things to, you know, raise our intelligence or raise our productivity, our happiness threshold, whatever, you know, it would also allow us to interact hands-free with computer devices, perhaps some sort of form of actual functioning, working Google Glass kind of device, where, you know, instead of having the mouse that we talked about in the last program, we're actually able to control a user interface straight from, you know, with our brains. And, you know, that'd be awesome. You have kind of a two-way feedback, right? I mean, you got a computer that's doing things to make your brain work better, but also it's allowing your brain to communicate directly with the computer. You know, that sort of thing, you know, you're in a different world at that point.
I was just about to say the same thing, Stephen. We are really living in a different world when that happens. Talking about the world transformed. And we're not that far from that technology, I don't think. You know, it's on its way. But that level of interaction with computers, in fact, even if it's just mostly us controlling computers with our brains, even if they haven't worked out too many of the, you know, feedback loops coming back in, although I think they'll get there eventually, that is a that is a different world for sure.
Tie this to this thing that I was seeing circulated. I think it was probably PJ Manny who had it on her Facebook earlier this week. The Cyber Olympics. It was showing people that have various disabilities that were competing, and I mean, some of these guys were in full exoskeletons that were allowing them to walk and run one guy that was completely paralyzed was riding a form of a bicycle. It's really more of a trike, but he was fully paralyzed from waist down, but his muscles were being stimulated by various devices. And imagine if you have a disability like that, what something that would be, you know, basically jacked into your brain without having, you know, not intrusively, what that would mean for you. And, you know, you could have a relatively normal life with that sort of technology.
Absolutely. It's huge. You know, the possibilities there are just about endless in terms of I'm sorry, Stephen, my phone's going to say something funny to me. No, it didn't. All of a sudden, Siri thought I was talking to her. I don't know how she got that idea. And pardon me for that digression.
This just in.
Yes. Speaking of
our phones talk, listen to what we have to say and respond. That's pretty
yes,
cool.
I must have said something that I'll have to go back that phonetically sounded like the phrase that I won't repeat right now, but you've heard it in the commercials that activates the robot, whose name
yeah.
I will not mention. When I say, hey, robot name, yeah, she doesn't respond to that. So anyway, sorry for that digression. But anyway, talk about living in a different world, huh? So
yeah.
Anyway, all that's to say, yeah, I think that I think we're gonna see some really amazing stuff around this. And Stephen, you and I are gonna be plugging stuff into our heads probably sooner than we think.
Again, I don't want to plug it into my head. I want to put it, you know, maybe I'll take the headband that has some sort of electrode that's attached outside of my head, you know. And if that works, then yeah, great. Now, of course, people like Michael J. Fox have actually had to put electrodes into their brains for various health reasons. There are people that are suffering from depression so profound that they have electrodes installed to inside their brains to allow. This sort of technology to improve mood that just sort of marginally works when it's with one of these headbands, it provides a profound impact when you actually have these wires in your head. So, and of course, the reason Michael J. Fox has it is for his Parkinson's. It helps alleviate some of his symptoms. So, there's all kinds of reasons people put wires into their heads, but it all. Right now, it has to do with medical reasons.
Yeah, I think it only makes sense that would be the initial implementations we'd see of this kind of thing too. Which
yeah.
You can see where this might, I don't know, play a role in treating dementia, all kinds of degenerative diseases where there might be potentially something there. It might even be related to stroke or to epilepsy.
Yeah.
Eventually, the idea that we can all benefit from just getting a boost, right? It's something along the lines of the TV show Limitless, but just with a little, a little handheld device or a little, the device that's wired into us. I don't know. I think that's pretty intriguing, and probably it's got legs from the standpoint of that's a technology that a people will go after and try to make happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As you can see, they're already doing it, right, with these headbands, which, I think are probably a pretty early implementation. Who knows what kind of effect you actually get out of those, but we'll see the real thing, I don't know, in a few years, right? Within five
yeah.
years, we'll have the real thing, probably, and we'll think nothing of it, you know. We'll get ready to do the show, and I'll say, wait, Stephen, I got to jack in first. I got to get my electrode.
I want to be... Phil 2.0 for this particular show. So.
Well, for any show, yeah. I can't
yeah.
do a show without it. Yeah, it'll be a huge crutch. It'll be like coffee in the morning. But I'm okay. I don't mind. I don't mind these crutches. They make me the modern cyber being that I am. Okay, let's move on. We've got a few more stories we want to get to this evening. How about this one? This is pretty huge, and I do mean huge. At $68 billion valuation, Uber will be bigger than GM, Ford, and Honda.
Sorry, that's hard to believe.
How Uber surpasses Ford and GM in valuation in 5 years. And this is the story over in Forbes. And the chart showing the valuation for Ford and General Motors over the last 6 years and the valuation of Uber over the same period of time and spoiler warning for a chart here, okay? Uber doesn't even do anything until 2013, right? And then
yeah.
it's not a straight vertical line. It's a series of steps, increasingly steep steps, to where suddenly Uber is, valued nearly $70 billion. I mean, it's hovering between, I think in the article they say here, $68 billion. I'll tell you what gets my attention about this, Stephen. Uber, in addition to being a service that I really like and use quite a bit, has made a big difference for a lot of the people who drive it, and some of the other services, Lyft and so forth, have too. And I was actually watching an interview with Gary Johnson today. You know who he is?
Yeah.
Yeah, libertarian candidate for president. And I won't go all political, but something that he said I think was prescient, I think relates to where we're going. and he, you know, what he said is, I want to see the Uber of doctors, right? That's how we solve healthcare. I want to see the Uber of, and he names all these other industries or sectors that can be Uberized. And I think Governor Johnson is on the right track there, that probably what we're seeing is a first wave of these kinds of things. Now, you know, this is part of a much larger conversation that we've had many times about, you know, as we become a digital society, is there going to be work for people to do, and how do people work, and all that kind of stuff. But the great thing about Uber is it has empowered people to use resources they have to make money, right? I mean, in the simplest terms. I mean, and when you look at the success that it has enjoyed, it's because of the perfect melding of those two things. People need to get somewhere. People need to make some money, right? And wow,
right.
You put those two things together with some good clean technology that unites them, and you've created a $70 billion company. Not bad,
and of course, it's got and its imitators in other fields. You know, you mentioned Lyft. That's very much in the same field. But I mean, there's also Airbnb and,
exactly.
and all these other services.
Biggest hotel
that
company in the world. Owns no hotel. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's amazing. And of course, periodically you'll hear about some crime that had to do, you know, maybe some, you know, some person attacked somebody that, you know, that was, they picked up somebody as an Uber driver or maybe an Airbnb. You hear the horror stories sometimes, but I guarantee there's horror stories associated with cabs and with, you know, normal hotels and everything else. It's
there are, yeah.
And so you know, it's you can't eliminate all of that. But I think one of the things about these services is that you know these are reputation based. You know, you build a reputation by being a good driver, having a nice clean car that you pick up somebody in, and you know, and. You build that reputation over time, and people are eager to get rides from you, and as opposed to someone that might not have as good of a reputation. And so that, the best of those services track that and allow customers to decide, you know, whether they want to stay in your home, and you know, your Airbnb home, or take a ride from you based on the reputation that person has generated over time. So. I think a lot of industries are poised to be interrupted by this sort of stuff.
I think so too. That's why I think this is big. I, you know, I don't know if we can build a whole economy around this or not, as Gary Johnson suggests. I hope he's right, but I think we're going to see a lot more Uber type things for sure. You know what it does to the overall infrastructure and to how people make a living and all that kind of stuff is really kind of murky. But I think it's good what Uber has done just in terms of giving people an opportunity to make some money. I mean, you can't deny that side of it. You know, if you talk to an Uber driver, most of them are really pleased with Uber for exactly that reason, right? It's given them an opportunity to do something.
Yeah. And probably most of the Uber drivers, that's not their full-time job. It's something that they can supplement their income when they choose to, you know,
right.
I mean, it could be that, you know, I'm a little short this month. Let me do a little Uber driving, you know, maybe drive a little on the weekends, a couple of weekends this month, and I can make up the gap, you know, that kind of thing. I think a lot of Uber drivers do, do it that way. You know, they're not doing it all the time. And then some probably are, but you know, it's
some are like retired. They're doing it in retirement, and you know,
right.
So there's just it varies. They're, you know, they're it's
yeah.
across the map, really. But I think you're right, and that's why I don't say they're looking for a job, right? I said they needed some money, right?
Yeah.
They gave them it gave
exactly. Them and yeah, most of these are not looking at this as a career. This is just to supplement whatever it is that they normally do.
Right.
So. But it's that can be a very big deal for people, and thinking about how some of the most innovative car companies are looking at the future of automobiles, And, you know, thinking of some of the most innovative car companies, you know, one of the names that pops in my head is Google. You know,
right? Yeah.
Car company? Well, kinda. They're working on this automated, auto drive systems for cars. And imagine what it could mean for these kind of services. I mean, you have a car that just kind of picks you up, and you don't have to own a car anymore with that kind of thing. You just own a phone, and
right.
and that's what Uber does. But at that point, the people that are driving people around lose that ability to earn a living if it's all automated. But even Tesla has, they're integrating so much of the internet and things into the car in safe ways that you could, if you had systems like what they're putting in the Teslas, in all cars, that would that certainly help an Uber driver, to run his business, basically, his or her business. So, it's kind of the way things are going.
I think it's indicative of a big change. We're going to see a lot more of those kinds of valuations, I think, in the years to come. Okay, we're just about out of time. We've got time for one more story, and I don't want to miss this because we've been meaning to talk about it for a couple weeks. Stephen, you were pretty psyched about this story. The headline is,
yep.
This guy fixed his teeth for cheap with homemade 3D printed retainers. What's going on here?
Okay, you have a combination of a couple of interesting things in this guy. He's a very smart guy that's in a university setting. So he has access to some, very high quality 3D printers and things like that in the labs there. But he's also poor. So, you don't normally see poor people having access to what this guy had access to. But what he did was very exciting. He basically went to, and checked out of the library a orthodontics textbook, took a full scan of the teeth as they are, consulted the orthodontics textbooks about how an orthodontist would move his teeth to make them straight, and then he came up with a model of how his teeth he wanted his teeth to be, and then the intermediate steps to get there, and he 3D printed all of these retainers, a series of retainers. He'd start with retainer number one, and then he'd wear that for a few days, and then he'd move on to retainer number two, moving his teeth as he needed to in order to get the smile he wanted. And the pictures are pretty profound. I mean, he had this kind of almost a buck tooth on one side that was pretty noticeable. And at the end of this process, and how long did this take? What did he say? It's like 16 weeks. It was 16 weeks. He went from that to very straight, good-looking teeth. And he did it all on his own with just a little bit of 3D printing. Pretty amazing.
I think it's completely amazing. We've talked about technology putting capability in the hands of people who didn't used to have it. We don't usually think of medical technology, but here it is, right? I mean, the guy knows some engineering. He knows how to open up an orthodontic book and read the directions, right? And he's got the other equipment at his disposal, and he figures out how to straighten out his own teeth. It's almost kind of like, well, you know what? If the robots don't take your job away, Mr. Orthodontist. It looks like the DIY crowd will, right? They're going to get it from both sides. I mean, obviously it takes new technologies to make this possible, but it's a great inspiring story for everybody, and I also think a real indicator of the kinds of changes we're going to see in the not too distant future.
He spent, by the way, Phil. He spent $60 on materials.
Okay, there you go. So generally speaking, I have the experience to say that orthodontia will run you a little more than that.
yes, it will.
So as a rule, I think if you get by with just $60 at your orthodontist, you've done very, very well for yourself. So that's a great story. I think we'll have to end it on that one. I know we had several other topics, but you know what, Stephen, we've talked about it. I think we're going to try to do. Check it out. Three shows next week. We're going to try. We're going to see if we can't dial in. It's been fun doing two the last couple of weeks. So let's see if maybe next week we can do three of them.
Sounds great. I'm on board.
All right. Well, thank you all for being with us. We will be back again next week with two, possibly three shows. And until next time, live to see it.